That 21-year-old pimp, that 21-year-old pimp, that 21-year-old trafficker who is not yet a convicted felon, roll on in to any place you want and buy a gun under this provision and walk around in whatever way you want. No training, no understanding, Wild West pimp style.
The Liberals' Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. You may have heard about a shooting recently. Yeah, it's been all over the news. Seems that a 6-year-old child shot a teacher in Virginia, a city called Newport News. Turns out I'm familiar with Newport News. It's close to the big naval base at Norfolk, where they build big ships and where a very large F-18 fighter base is located. I, myself, am in shock about this. I mean, how could something like this happen? Where'd this 6-year-old little boy get a real gun, first off? I have my suspicions, but we don't really know, of course, not yet. Yeah, it could have been his parents' gun, and probably was, but we don't know for absolute certain just yet. But one thing is certain. This is horrible, folks. I've never heard of this happening before. Not this. I mean, this just happened just last week on Friday. What the devil is going on here? My immediate thoughts, of course, go to the teacher that got shot. I've read that she's in critical condition. I've also read, fortunately, that she's showing signs of improvement. And I think we all hope for her speedy recovery, her full recovery here. But it begs the question, why would this 6-year-old kid take a gun to school and shoot a teacher with it? Well, there's another thing that comes to mind. Naturally, the gun controllers are going to go nuts with this. They're going to be calling for mandatory lockboxes for everyone with a gun in this country. Oh, and even though this was done with a handgun, they'll be making calls for ban assault weapons now, meaning, of course, semi-automatic rifles. Just watch, they'll be doing it. I personally consider that dancing in the blood of this poor teacher who's still in, I understand, grave condition at the hospital. But they'll do it. I, on the other hand, believe in looking not at red herrings, but at root causes. Why did this happen? Why did a kid, especially one that young, think it was somehow okay to take a gun to school and shoot a teacher with it? People say, well, obviously his parents didn't lock up the gun. Well, experience tells me that this is a false association. See, I remember being 6 years old. Quite well, actually. Matter of fact, I remember being 5 years old. When I was 5, my dad was living in San Francisco. Saw him all the time, and definitely every weekend. At the time, he lived in an apartment in Knob Hill. It's a neighborhood called Knob Hill. It's a really nice part of the city. And as you longtime listeners know, he had guns. One of them was his home defense piece in .357 Magnum. The other was his carry piece in .38 Special. Well, he showed my little 5-year-old self where his guns were. Yeah, they were in the lower drawer of his nightstand, right by the bed. No locks, no lock boxes, just right there in the drawer. I can still see it to this day, decades later. He told me, son, I'm showing you this because I don't believe in hiding things from you. He also made sure that I knew that I was not ever to touch them. See, folks, he was showing me where they were so that I would know to stay away from them. He taught me that guns were a no-joke sort of thing. This ain't the Bugs Bunny cartoons. This was real life, and a real gun could really kill someone. Yes, I did know about the police and how they carried guns, even at that age. I also knew the difference between cartoons and real life, because guess what? He made sure I knew that difference. And here's the result of that. I didn't touch my dad's guns until I was in my 40s. Yeah, my 40s, and already an experienced range safety officer with several years under my belt. Even then, it was only by his specific request that I touched them at all. See, he'd learned that I'd become a firearms enthusiast. He'd see me handle firearms comfortably. And most importantly, he discovered that not only had I learned the four rules of firearm safety, but that I was religious about following them. And I am. So he asked me to give his guns a look over to make sure they were in good shape to use, if, you know, God forbid, need be. So, of course I did. And it turned out they were a little stiff, needed a bit of oiling up, so I went ahead and did that for him. He watched me like a hawk, of course, and let me tell you, I appreciated that. You know that he still, even then, by the time I was in my 40s, he still kept his guns in unlocked drawers, just like he had been doing since before I was even born? Yeah, he did. I still knew in my 40s where his guns were. Same place they always were when I was 5. And until the day he died, I never, ever touched them without him specifically asking me to do so. Not even once. Why did I avoid doing that? Why didn't I just grab one of his guns and go shoot someone, you know? It would have been easy, right? Here's why. It's because my dad raised me and taught me from a very young age. He actually parented me. I know, what a concept, right? Oh my God. Yeah, taught me right and wrong. He taught me the reverence for life that I continue to have today. He taught me ethics and morals, honoring your word. You know, all that old school stuff you've read about, you know, just being a good person. Yeah, all that stuff. And I appreciate it to this day. You could say today, I'm an old school kind of guy, always have been, just with a modern accent. Yeah, I like that, old school guy with a modern accent. And it's true. I still believe in all that stuff he taught me from the moment I was born, pretty, you know, basically. And that's why I never even got the thought, not even the thought, of taking one of his guns and going off and shooting someone. I can say to you all, with honesty in my voice, that I never, ever even contemplated anything like that growing up. No, no, no. The worst I ever contemplated, and this is the worst, was confronting a bully and kicking his butt, you know, old-fashioned fistfighting style. And I actually did that once or twice coming up, sure. But that was it. Shooting someone? Shooting someone? No, never. And guess what? All my friends, they were all just like me that way. Yeah, of course, I knew a couple of guys who carried knives around. I mean, duh. Yeah, the few tough guys who liked their switchblades and such. Yeah, sure. But that was it. The very notion of a kid carrying a gun around? No, unheard of. All us kids knew better than to go that far. Oh, man, our parents would have whipped the hell out of us, any one of us, if we ever did anything that stupid. And they would have been right to do so, too. Yeah, I get what you're thinking. Whoa, Cowboy T, you sound like you're from back in the day. Well, folks, I'm not that old. Not really. Oh, yeah, I'm a good deal older than 21, sure, yeah. But I'm far from being one of the old folks just yet. I still got a long ways to go before I get there. And I do hope that I get there one of those days. I hope that I do get there. No, no. I tell you this to let you know that my own childhood wasn't that long ago. We had plenty of household guns in, you know, my neighborhoods, various neighborhoods I lived, you know, where kids theoretically could have gotten to them, sure. I learned that as I got older. But by and large, we kids left those guns alone. We sure didn't have kids shooting up other kids. We definitely didn't have kids shooting up schools. We didn't have any of that. None of that. So I got to wonder, since, proportionally, we probably just about had, had about as many households with guns then, back then, as we do now, maybe even more. Yes, we had guns in homes back then, too, plenty of them, yeah. What was it that changed? If it wasn't the number of guns per capita, what was it? Well, obviously, it couldn't be that we had the guns in the homes. I mean, because I just told you we had guns in homes when I was a kid, just like today. They're right there in my dad's nightstand, remember? I knew right where they were. I also knew not to touch them without his express permission. You know, maybe that's it, folks. Are parents teaching their kids about guns? You know, what they are? And to leave them alone like our parents did during my childhood? Do parents still do that? Well, I've made some observations over the years. I used to work in a large school system here in Virginia, and while I was there at that school system, I ended up getting to see a lot of things involving kids. Things that pertain directly to the discussion we're having right now. And we're going to get into that right after the break. See you in a moment. We're back. I mentioned that there were some things I saw in schools that pertain to the discussion at hand, which is, how could kids, even as young as 6 years old, come to do something so depraved as shoot other living things? I'm talking about other than going hunting for food. I promised you that we'd get into some of those things that I saw that seems to lead to that nowadays. You know, things that weren't really present when I was a kid coming up. Here's what I saw. Kids apparently have less respect for their elders than we were raised to have. And again, I remind you, not so long ago. Oh yeah, it's true. They routinely sass back at their teachers. They sass back at other adults. I've seen this even from 6-year-olds. I've had them sass me back. I'll tell you about that. I was working on a home renovation. Two little girls asked me what I was doing. I went ahead and told them. You know, no reason not to. They asked. I was friendly and nice about it, sure. Got back to work, saying, okay, you two, be good. Just like that. Their response. We don't have to listen to you. You're not our father. Really? Oh, I could hardly believe it. I could hardly believe that I heard this. This is in 2010, folks, 13 years ago now. At the time, I was carrying some PVC plumbing pipe. I dropped it on the grass and got a, what the hell did you just say to me? Look on my face. Oh, they knew they did wrong. They weren't sure what to do. They were wondering. They were giving me that, oh, what is he going to do now? Well, then I started walking toward them. Then they squealed and ran into a house, a nearby house. So I walked up to that house and I knocked on the door. A man came to the door, presumably their father. I explained what just happened, ending with, I was pretty sure you'd want to know about this right away. His response was almost like he didn't really want to be bothered with this. But he said to me, you know, sighing, okay, I'll take care of it. I thanked him and left. I never heard from those two girls again. But the fact that two kids so young got sassy with me like that for no good reason, well, it reinforced what I was seeing in the school system. I was already seeing that very same bad attitude from kids of pretty much all ages. So I wondered, what the heck's going on here? I started asking some teachers and administrators about this. You know, I described my own experience with those two little girls, too. The administrators and teachers' response was scary, is really the only word that comes to mind. Basically, it consisted of the following sentiment, which I'm going to paraphrase for you here. Just out of necessity, I have to paraphrase it. It goes basically like this. To the parents of these kids, their little darlings can do no wrong. If we discipline their kids, the parents go ballistic. They're even threatening lawsuits against us and the school. We get no backup from them when their kids misbehave. The kids know that, and they don't respect the authority. Yep, that's about what I saw. All throughout the school system, too. No, not every kid was like that, of course. You know, don't get me wrong. There were plenty of respectful kids, too. But I sure saw a whole lot more of that than I ever saw when I was in school. So I figured, okay, let's get some more info. Let's ask some parents. Let's ask some of my neighbors who I, you know, get along well with, you know, about all this. They confirmed my suspicions. Folks, too many parents out here are not doing with their kids like my dad did with me. They're not raising their kids. They're not really teaching them right from wrong. Not really teaching them how to be good citizens. Not teaching them the golden rule or whatever equivalent your religion or culture might have. Every culture, every religion has something along the lines of the golden rule. I know because I've traveled the world and seen it. Far too often, kids are not being taught this stuff anymore like we were taught. Instead, parents are letting them, you know, other things like TV, the internet, the smartphones, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, video games, all that stuff. They let that stuff raise their kids. You ever notice how plugged in people are today? It's like the Matrix movies, if you've ever seen those. People are jacked in now. Yeah, can't live without their smartphones or social media or video games. TikTok is raising the kids now. Yeah, a few years before that, it was, you know, Beavis and Butthead and South Park. And I'm not seeing evidence that the parents are having those necessary discussions with their kids about the difference between real life and make-believe. I'm not seeing evidence of the parents discussing with their kids what their little darlings see on TikTok. Now, personally, I'm not necessarily against kids looking at TikTok or Facebook or Twitter or other social media. I'm not necessarily against kids having smartphones. I'm not. But I am very concerned when parents are letting these things take the place of the parents and raise their kids instead of the parents themselves raising them. And that's what I think happened here with this 6-year-old who shot this teacher. He probably somehow got into his mind that he could reenact something he saw on TV or social media or somewhere else on the internet. He probably thought, oh, hey, I'll just do a control Z afterward. Ha ha ha. Yeah, and yes, I've actually heard that kind of sentiment before from a kid. I have. Well, as we all know, no. There is no control Z do-over when you do harm to someone. You're not calling that bullet back. There is no respawn like in Call of Duty. That doesn't happen. Where were the parents? That's my question. Where were the parents here? Why weren't they raising their son and teaching him like I was taught? Remember I told you I'd talked with some parents who I trust and who also trust me? Yeah, they're scared to let their own kids play with some of these other kids whose parents aren't bothering to raise them. Problem, they know that they can't prevent all of that interaction because, of course, kids see each other at school. I can tell you what happens in the modern day when parents do raise their kids. It's a couple I know. Two sons. Father's been a gun owner for years. Mother's well aware of this and supports it. Well, their sons expressed interest in guns, as often happens. Parents taught their two boys about what guns are, how to properly deal with them, didn't make them the forbidden fruit, no. They showed them with strict supervision what they do and how they work, all that stuff. Took both their sons to the range, taught them the safe and proper operation of firearms, yeah. These parents also taught them that if they encountered a gun outside of their supervision, to leave it alone and leave the area. Get out of there. They also just generally raised their sons in what most of you would probably call the old school. Here's the result. Both boys joined the Boy Scouts and became Eagle Scouts, the highest ranking. Both went to college and got good jobs. Both are very upstanding young adults with their heads screwed on very well. One has more of an interest in firearms than the other, but oh, well, that's to be expected. They're different people, right? You know, different brothers. But both, however, know the rules of firearm safety. And neither of them would ever contemplate shooting people up. That's what happens when you raise your kids properly, folks. That's the responsibility of the parents. So I ask again, where were the parents here? Where were the parents for that 6-year-old in Newport News, Virginia, just a couple of days ago? That, folks, is the problem. It ain't the gun. The gun is just an object. Where the hell are all the parents nowadays? That's what I want to know. Where are they? We'll be back. We're back. We just had a very serious, a deadly serious discussion in the previous segment. It needed to be had, and it needs to be had more generally throughout this country, in my personal view. Parents need to raise their kids. Well, there's another conversation that's also going on, and it's very much related to that one we just had. It's about something called the red flag laws. Now, for those of you who haven't heard this term before, here's what red flag laws are. These are laws that allow people to report a concern about a given person to the authorities, a concern that they might commit a crime with a gun. What happens next is that the cops show up at your door, usually at gunpoint, to confiscate your guns. Oh, on a temporary basis, of course. And you have to go to a judge to get your property back, yeah. Now, this happens before you've actually committed a crime. It's more based on a hunch that you might commit a crime. That's the red flag, see. You've probably figured out, pretty quickly that I don't approve of these sorts of laws. There's a discussion going on right now on the Liberal Gun Club forums about this, and I think I'm the one that started it. There are varying opinions on this. First, if we're going to have a serious conversation about this, which is what we're going to have, we need to discuss just exactly what a red flag law is, and we need to do so with some precision. I'm not a lawyer, but I'll do my best. We all know that when it comes to the law, the devil is in the details. So I've been looking up stuff and doing just that. Then I found an analysis on these red flag laws written by a couple of Duke University professors. It's called Firearms, Extreme Risk, and Legal Design: Red Flag Laws and Due Process. Obviously, I won't quote the entire article here. It's pretty long. But it comes to the following conclusion. Quote, although we do not undertake an exhaustive or individualized assessment of various state laws, we conclude that the basic structure of existing extreme risk laws satisfies the requirements of due process. Close quote. I also noticed that they used some charged wording, meaning wording designed to sway you emotionally one way or the other. For example, they refer to these red flag laws as a, and I quote, promising new avenue of gun regulation. Close quote. Yeah, promising new avenue of gun regulation. They use the word promising. It means they like it. They approve of it. Well, here's another example of what looks like bias to me. They say the following, quote, "These are often called red flag laws, though that label might convey a stigma, so we will use the increasingly common extreme risk label," close quote. That sounds like when they changed the term gun control to what they call gun safety. That sounds like a propaganda thing there, folks. So I read the entire thing because I want to know if that was, you know, really true. And I wanted to know what they were talking about in the first place. And yeah, it is biased in favor of these red flag laws. When I detect bias, I start looking for the money. I wanted, okay, who's funding this? You remember the old saying, follow the money, right? Yeah. Remember that? I do. We learned that during the Nixon Watergate hearings. Follow the money. So I did. The two authors, a Professor Blochet and a Professor Charles, both work at a place called the Duke Center for Firearms Law. Duke, huh? Yeah, yeah, that really is part of the Duke University School of Law. Yeah. This Duke Center for Firearms Law, well, I'll just tell you what the dean of the law school herself says about it. Her name is Professor Carrie Abrams. Quote, "Duke Law School's newest research center is devoted to the development and dissemination of reliable and balanced scholarship on issues surrounding firearms, gun rights and regulation, and the Second Amendment." Close quote. Okay, that sounds pretty noble, just on its face. But let's see if that's really true. Yeah, let's see if that's true. Now, who's funding this new research center? Remember, follow the money. Well, here's what Duke University itself says. Here's what the law school itself says. Quote, "The Center for Firearms Law is supported by grants from the Katie McGrath and J.J. Abrams Family Foundation, Crankstart, Every Town for Gun Safety, the Joyce Foundation, Andrew Marks, Howard and Nancy Marks, and Arthur and Tony Rembe Rock." Close quote. Let's look at those donors. Katie McGrath and J.J. Abrams Family Foundation. Looked it up. Yes, it's that J.J. Abrams, the filmmaker, the one who made the new reboot Star Trek movies. He's a well-known, big-time Democrat Party supporter, which does include gun control. Let's keep going. Crankstart. Who's Crankstart? Well, this is another family foundation located in San Francisco, my hometown. Hey. Looking at their website, it's kind of a basic website, but they appear to support so-called progressive policies. You know, that is to say, the left wing of the political spectrum. I remind you all that gun control is largely a left-wing issue. Let's keep going. Every Town for Gun Safety. Bing, 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 bing. Yep, there it is. Michael Bloomberg. Well, we already know his views on guns. Guns for me and my bodyguards, but not for thee. And now, who's the Joyce Foundation? This is a family foundation out of the Midwest. Turns out they are well known for supporting and funding gun control. They've given millions of dollars for gun control causes over the years. Now, who's Andrew Marks? Well, I couldn't find anything conclusive on Andrew Marks because there are several Andrew Markses out there, and I don't want to get the wrong one. So I won't talk about that. Let's keep going. Howard and Nancy Marks. I wonder if they're related. I don't know. But I could find Howard and Nancy Marks. This one I could find. Howard Marks is an investor. He's a big-time investor, too. He is also a member of the Democrat Party. And we know that the Democrats support gun control. And finally, Arthur and Tony Rembe Rock. I couldn't find too much on their specific political positions. They're in San Francisco, though. Without further information, I'd say there's a better chance that they lean Democrat than not, just because of the population of the state and especially the city of San Francisco. But I have not been able to confirm that just yet. I suspect it, but I can't confirm it. And that, folks, is who's funding this new research center at Duke University Law School. Now that we know who's funding it, we know what's likely to come out of it. Bloom Boy, as I call him, is not going to give his money to anything he doesn't agree with. So anytime Bloomberg money is involved, you know it's slanted. Same goes for the Joyce Foundation. Basically, the message is, if you don't publish views that we like, we'll stop funding you. And I saw that influence clear as day as I read this paper. In the next segment, we're going to have a look at some of the specific red flag laws that are now on the books. This is really serious stuff, folks. The implications of this are scarier than a lot of people want to acknowledge or admit, and there's nothing liberal about it. I repeat, this is not the liberal way to do things. I'll explain in more detail in just a moment. We promised you we'd look more specifically at some of these red flag laws to show you why they're not good and why they're actually un-American. That's exactly what we're going to do right now. Let's get to it. Fundamentally, what these laws do is allow government officials to take your property, your firearms, away from you without you ever having actually committed a crime. Yeah. It's true. You don't have to have committed a crime. That's right. Under these laws, government officials only need to think that you might commit a crime. How do they make this determination? Well, because someone who doesn't like you or has a problem with you reported you to the police. I looked at Virginia's red flag law as the example, since I currently live in Virginia. This law was passed by the Bloomberg-funded Democrats in the year 2020. Remember what I mentioned about that new Duke University Law School Research Center and who's funding it? Well, here's what Virginia's new red flag law allows to make such a report on you. Here's the list. Family members, guardians, domestic partners, romantic partners or dates, parent of a child in common. I don't know what in common means, but I guess it just means parent of a child. Roommates, police officers, mental health professionals. You see there that romantic partners or dates is on there? Yeah. You see that? You hear that? You go on a date with someone. That person you went on a date with can make a red flag report on you to the police. You broke up with someone for whatever reason? Well, that jilted lover can go straight to the police and make a red flag report if they know you're a gun owner. This is true, even if you've actually not broken any laws or actually threatened that person. Yeah, that's right. Due process, anyone? Oh, the law also, by the way, says that only a Commonwealth attorney or a police officer can actually take that report and go to the judge to get your guns taken away. Well, there are a few problems with that, too. Despite how good it sounds on paper, there are a few problems with that, too. First off, the order was already processed, and the police, with guns drawn, have already raided your home to take your guns from you. So your property has already been confiscated at this point. Whoa, wait, how can this be? You know, didn't a judge review everything? Yeah, a judge did. But you didn't know about it. See, there's this thing called an ex parte hearing. that happens a lot in certain kinds of cases. They use it a lot for domestic violence cases. What this means is that only one party, the party that's doing the complaining about you, is there in the hearing before the judge. You're not there. Why? Well, because this is a so-called emergency hearing. We don't have time. We got to do this now. We got to do this now, 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 they say. So the only the side of the person accusing you, that's the only side that gets heard by this judge. So what do you think's going to happen now? You ain't there. I repeat, you ain't there. This is an ex parte hearing. What do you think's going to happen? Yeah. 9 times out of 10, the judge is going to go right along with the party complaining against you. You know, just in case, for safety's sake. Here comes the SWAT team to your house, guns drawn, ready to shoot you. Now, I should also mention that this isn't a criminal case. Nope. Remember, you haven't committed a crime, so there's no criminal case to make. No charges against you, none of that. Rather, it's a civil case. Yeah, civil case. Among other things, that means the burden of proof is a lot lower than in a criminal case. It means circumstantial evidence carries a lot more weight in civil cases. Yeah. And circumstantial evidence can be pretty flimsy, folks. We've all seen it. Nikki Jovino, a white female university student, falsely accused 2 black men of rape. These 2 young men were college football players on a football scholarship. What happened to them after this rape accusation? Police descended upon them. The university kicked them out of the school. They lost their football scholarships. Their lives got turned upside down, and definitely not for the better. A lot of harm done to these 2 guys. Lot of harm. Turns out, she did have sex with both of them. But it was consensual. There wasn't any rape. So why did this white female make such a horrible, life-threatening accusation against these 2 innocent black men? Why did she lie like that? Why would she do this? Well, it's because it turns out there was another guy, a white fellow, that she also liked and wanted to date. Yeah. Seems she wanted to get some sympathy from this young white fellow that she liked to increase her chances of dating him. We only know about this because she ended up admitting to her lie. Now, if she kept her mouth shut, those 2 young black men probably would have the sex offender scarlet letter on them for the rest of their lives. Brian Banks, anyone? And notice, by the way, how the police and the university both acted here. Guilty until proven innocent. That's how domestic violence charges can go, folks, especially if you're a black man accused by a white female. Think about it. So let's not pretend that false accusations don't happen. Let's not pretend that officials never take a guilty until proven innocent posture. And all of Nikki Jovino's so-called evidence was circumstantial. Well, heck, it was totally made up. It was a fabrication. It couldn't be otherwise because these 2 black men didn't rape her. There was no sexual assault. It didn't happen. The only way we found out is because she outed herself. And that was a criminal case. And there have been plenty more like that one. There have been plenty more of these cases like that simply don't make national news like this one did. Now, consider the civil case, where the burden of proof is even lower than a criminal case. Red flag laws are civil cases, remember, not criminal. And you haven't committed a crime. And that's the danger, folks. That's the danger. And no, it ain't just theoretical. This kind of danger is faced by people in American courtrooms every day. I just got through telling you about one. Now, let's see how this guilty until innocent problem applies to these red flag laws. Again, we're using Fairfax County in Northern Virginia as the example. Say you're in a predominantly liberal/progressive part of the state. turns out that the people in Fairfax County, Virginia are mostly liberal slash progressive and by far tend to vote for Democrats. Their entire county board of supervisors, that's the legislative body for the county, they're all Democrats. They seem to think gun control is okay all throughout Northern Virginia. That list of people I mentioned earlier who can do a red flag report on you, that came straight from Fairfax County government's website. Unabridged, unedited. And it even includes people that you merely went on a date with. Oh, I know, only a state attorney or a police officer can actually take that report and go to the judge to get your guns taken away. I know. Well, here's the problem with that. First, remember, the police have already shown up at your home with their guns pointed right at you to take your guns away. So your property's already been confiscated at gunpoint. By force, your property's gone, even though you haven't committed a crime or even been charged with a crime. And the first inkling that you got of any of this was when 30 armed police officers surrounded your home and maybe even broke down the door with a no-knock raid at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. That's first off. Second, that means that whenever you do eventually make it to court to present your side, you're not facing the person who actually accused you. Oh, no. Your roommate or the date that you had, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, or that jilted lover? No. They're not there in court for you to face. Oh, no. You're not actually facing your accuser. Rather, you're now facing a Commonwealth attorney. That's a state attorney. State attorney in court. That's right. In a civil case, you're going up against the entire might of the state of Virginia. They're funded by taxpayer dollars. That's a bottomless money pit, folks. But Cowboy T, don't I have the right to legal representation too? Sure you do. Of course you do. But remember, this isn't a criminal case. It's a civil case. That means, no, the court does not have to provide you with legal counsel. Not in a civil case, which is what this is. Red flag cases are civil cases, remember. That means you, not the state, have to pay for your legal representation. You've got to hire that lawyer. And we all know how high legal fees are. It'll probably cost you anywhere between $10,000 and $20,000 for that attorney. Maybe more. Yeah. And you haven't done anything wrong. You haven't broken a single law. Folks, do you have a spare $10,000 to $20,000 lying around? I sure don't. And I doubt most other people do either, unless your name is, I don't know, Rockefeller or Kennedy or Clinton, Bush, or, you know, certain very wealthy families. Of course, members of those very wealthy families are usually, you know, highly politically connected anyway, so they won't have cases like this brought against them anyhow. They know the governor of Virginia personally. Yeah. They hang out with state senators and House delegates. Their kids play together at their lakefront homes on Lake Anna. You get the idea. So unless you're them, you're forking out $10,000 to $20,000 of money that you really cannot spare. $10,000 to $20,000, maybe more. This is not only, by the way, just to try to get your guns back, but also to try to get this scarlet letter off of your record. Folks, this is a scarlet letter. A red flag brand on your record is a scarlet letter. It's almost akin to a sex offender, you know, especially if you live in a mostly Democrat voting part of the country. And that follows you, by the way. Good luck getting that decent paying IT job at Amazon or somewhere. Forget about that. And if you have a security clearance, which a lot of people in Virginia have because of all the government work, well, say goodbye to that too. There goes your job. Oh, but Cowboy T, you can petition to have that reversed. It's not a serious burden on people. Think of the children. No. If this happens to you, you're probably thinking a lot more about, how am I going to pay my home mortgage now that I just lost my job? How about that, folks? Yes, it is a serious burden. It's a very serious burden. And remember, you haven't actually done anything wrong. You haven't broken a single law here. yes, we do have activist judges. How do I know that? How am I so sure about that? Here's how. It's because my wife ran into one a few years ago during an automobile collision case. Now, she was totally in the right. I have photographs, pictures of the car's damage as proof of that. But the judge basically decided, well, the woman who hit you needs a break, so, you know, since she has kids, so I'm going to give the victory to her. Fortunately, my wife's insurance company appealed, and she won that case on appeal. But that only happened because the insurance company has deep enough pockets, and they didn't want to have to pay for something that they shouldn't have had to pay for. So don't tell me, folks, that we don't have activist judges who make bad decisions. Now, consider two romantic partners. Well, let's just say both are white. Let's get the racial angle out of this for the moment. He happens to be a defense contractor for the U.S. government with a security clearance. Pretty typical here, you know, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, in the state of Virginia. Pretty common stuff. Certainly common in Northern Virginia. Let's also say he's a member of the NRA. He regularly attends NRA meetings. He goes and does target practice. He teaches firearms instruction, you know, those sorts of things. He makes posts about this stuff on his website. Let's also say she isn't really into guns. I mean, she's into other stuff. She likes him. She's just not into the NRA. Okay, fine. So they're seeing each other in a romantic way. Now, for whatever reason, they break up, and she didn't want that. Well, she feels scorned now, and she goes and files a red flag report with the Fairfax County Police Precinct. What do you think is going to happen? You really think the police aren't going to act on this, folks? A woman, a white woman, goes and files a red flag law against a gun owner in a place like Northern Virginia. Oh, yeah, they'll act on it. You better believe it, folks. They'll get that report straight to the state attorney. They'll look at it in his website. They'll look at this fellow's website. They'll look at the social media. They'll find he's an NRA member. They'll find that he teaches marksmanship and that he talks about self-defense with a firearm. Oh, and by the way, he's an Army veteran too. Whoopsie! Hey, red flag. He might harm her or someone else for the children. Unfortunately, yes, that's how too many officials here in Virginia think now. I wish I were just exaggerating, folks. But I'm not. Next thing this guy knows, the police are at his door 30, 40 deep with military gear like an armored personnel carrier in front of his house, yelling orders to him as if he'd been, I don't know, one of the September 11th terrorists or something like that. His neighbors are all going to see this happening, so they know that he did a bad thing. Scarlet letter. The police confiscate his property at gunpoint, also leaving his home a shambles, which is usually what happens during these raids. He finds out now he's got a red flag mark on his record. Scarlet letter. Now he has to spend tens of thousands of dollars of his own money to hire an attorney. 2 weeks later, he's in front of a judge. The judge was appointed by either former governors Tim Kaine, Terry McAuliffe, or Ralph Northam. All three of them Democrats. All three of them funded by Michael Bloomberg. That judge was appointed by any one of them. And that's a 12-year spread, folks. So yeah, this is very possible. Really, folks, what do you think is going to happen? And therein lies the problem. Not only is the accused prevented from facing his actual accuser in court, but he now has to go up against the entire might of the state government for not doing a thing wrong. Now let's add another dimension to that. Yeah, as if that weren't enough. Let's add the other dimension. That instructor, that Army veteran, he's now black. The woman he was seeing, the one who started this whole red flag report on him, is white. Yeah. Need I really say more about the problems with all this? Well, yeah, I guess I do. Yeah. This is one of the things that really disturbed me about the conversation I was having on the Liberal Gun Club forums about this very topic. On that forum, they're well aware of racism problems in our legal system. They repeatedly affirm that it's bad and should stop now. I agree. But when I raised the racial angle on the red flag laws, for the most part, they just kind of poo-pooed it. Yeah, didn't really want to face that aspect of it. And yes, the people poo-pooing this problem were white. You know, as in it doesn't really affect them, so they don't think about it so much. Matter of fact, I'll give you what one person said. Quote, "Of course you have to get very specific to the language, but in concept, I'm in favor of a take first, due process later. Provided the take is under circumstances that are reasonable and that the process and timeline of the due process is reasonable. I think LE needs that tool," LE meaning law enforcement. "And yeah, it'll be abused, but punish the abusers. Don't not do it out of an unrealized fear that hasn't happened yet." Close quote. Well, that's the problem. This person is A, agreeing with Donald Trump on taking someone's property without due process. Never thought I'd see that happen. B, repeating the language of the gun controllers. You know, reasonable, common sense regulations. I've heard that one before too many times. C, repeating the language of certain abusive, thug-like police officers who call things like civil asset forfeiture tools that law enforcement needs. D, acknowledging that it will be abused, though advocating punishing the abusers. Well, the problem there is, punishing the abusers is simply not going to happen in places like Fairfax County or California or New York City where they believe in gun control. It's not going to happen. And E, calling this an unrealized fear that hasn't happened yet. That last one, that really galls me. An unrealized fear that hasn't happened yet? Really? Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, well, the Negroes will be able to go to school. They'll be able to vote, ride on railroads, use the bathrooms. Laws are separate but equal. That won't be abused now. Yeah, sure. And we all know how that turned out. No, folks. No. We are not supposed to be punishing people when they haven't committed a crime. And a false red flag mark is definitely punishing people. Well, Virginia's law scared me enough to where I also had decided to have a look at California's red flag law. You know, since I'm from there and all. California's red flag law is rather similar to Virginia's. It's not exactly the same, but it's pretty close. As we all know, Californians, by and large, tend to be socially liberal. Like me. Yeah, that's especially true if you're one of the big population areas, you know, like, say, the San Francisco Bay Area, my hometown, or the greater Los Angeles area, where my dad lived for years, which is also huge, by the way, or San Diego. The Democrats have a supermajority in the California state legislature, and they have for a while. And the only non-Democrat governor in decades was an extremely famous and beloved movie star, Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, the governator. The current state Senate majority leader, by the way, a fellow named Kevin DeLeon, which I call Kevin the Lying, he's a virulent anti-Second Amendment activist. I've covered him before here on the Liberals' Gun Corner. He has shown repeatedly that he will distort, cheat, and yes, even outright lie to push more gun control, though. You know, as long as his own bodyguards stay armed, of course. You know, he's got to have his own bodyguards armed like the military. "Oh, there won't be abuses, Cowboy T. There are safeguards for due process. You want to save our kids, don't you?" Here's the problem. This is California. We're talking about California here. Having been born and grown up there, I know California very well. All this stuff that you're seeing, that you're hearing, "Oh yeah, it looks great on paper. Yeah, yeah. But so did the Soviet Constitution back in the day too. I've read that too, at least the English translation. It looked beautiful." We all know what it turned out to be in real life though. Stalin, all that business. Same here. In the real world, California officials will stop at nothing to deprive someone of firearms, and they'll do so for any reason that they think sounds good to them. Oh, we'll say, for example, let's say, okay, here's an example. Some people want to hold a, I don't know, a pro-Confederacy get-together. Now, personally, I think that's abhorrent. Confederacy worship, it's just plain stupid in my mind. You know, well, but as long as they're not actually harming anyone else, that is their right, too. As much as I don't like it, it is their right. And in such a case, they merely would be exercising at least two of several constitutional rights that I can think of, the right of peaceable assembly and the right of free speech. I can actually see people doing red flag reports on every one of the attendees of such a get-together. I am also very sure that a so-called ex parte hearing would take place in front of the judge, and that California judges would grant the order immediately in such cases. Again, I despise Confederacy worship. One picture of my dad would show you why. But it is still their right to do so, even that. And that in and of itself does not qualify as a reason to just take people's property, since no actual crime has been committed. Oh, my cowboy T, that's far-fetched. You're starting to sound like a conspiracy theorist. Oh. Really? You really think this kind of thing is far-fetched, huh? Think again. Remember, President Donald Trump advocated for just this sort of thing. Yes, that's right, folks. The red flag law pushers actually agree with Donald Trump. Like I said, I never thought I'd see that happen. Here's an exact quote of what he said. Quote, "I like taking guns away early. Take the guns first. Go through due process second." Close quote. Well, that's just what these red flag laws do. They take the guns first. Then they might go through due process second. I never thought I'd see the Democrats, especially the ones in California, especially anyone funded by Bloomberg, actually agree with a constitutional violation like President Trump was also pushing for. Go figure that. Oh, by the way, for those who don't believe that he did say that, it was in USA Today, February 28th, 2018. You can look this up, and it is corroborated by other sources. Who would have thought? Who would have thought that California Democrats, who hate President Trump with a passion, would be embracing the very same violation of due process that he did? Wow. Now, I'm also going to remind you that a March 2017 report by the National Registry of Exonerations found that black defendants are more likely to be found guilty of lawbreaking than white defendants. Oh, gee, big surprise there. Well, that certainly would apply to the red flag laws, too. So this is also going to disproportionately affect people of color. Not good. And I know that a lot of white people, and that definitely includes white progressives, don't like to hear about this stuff, this angle of it. It makes them uncomfortable to hear this sort of thing. I get it. It's because they feel personally indicted somehow whenever someone brings up the subject of racism. That is, by the way, the basis of Robin DiAngelo's groundbreaking research project about something she calls white fragility. That's the basis of it. They're so afraid of a racism charge sticking that they'll react almost violently in a lot of cases to shut it down. Why? Well, because a racism charge is also a big-time scarlet letter, too. So anytime we bring up race to a group of white progressives, they immediately get defensive, you know, as if they are themselves somehow being attacked. They're not, but they feel like they are. That's the gut-level instinct. And naturally, the response is, defend, defend, defend. And they react accordingly. Well, since they know how a scarlet letter feels, due to their abject fear of being branded with a racism charge, even when one isn't being made against them, they also should understand the incendiary nature of any other scarlet letter like that, including a red flag mark. And yes, a red flag mark on your record is definitely a scarlet letter. It marks you as unstable, dangerous, can't be trusted. Good luck getting a job with that mark, at least a decent one. Red flag marks are like civil asset forfeiture, I think by design. The government officials who want these laws are ardent gun controllers. Remember, Bloomberg, Joyce Foundation, Brady Group, and all that stuff. What they really want is eventual total gun confiscation, except, of course, for their own bodyguards. That's their end game. Confiscation. That's what this is about. It really is. And the end result of that can be seen in places like Red China, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, and other dictatorial regimes. I keep mentioning that so much because it's true. I've traveled. I've seen it. That's what Bloomberg and all the rest of them want. That's why the Bill of Rights is there, though. The way that it's there, to protect us, the people, from that very thing. And that's what I intend to continue defending. Now you know why, A, red flag laws are so dangerous, and B, why I must oppose them. I have no choice but to oppose them if I really believe in liberty. And that, folks, is what the United States is all about. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time. I know we covered a very heavy subject this time, and not everyone will agree with what's being said here. I get that. But this is America, and if I have anything to say about it, we will always be able to do that here. So, until the next one, safe shooting. Be very cautious and skeptical of any further abridgment of our liberties. And as always, thanks for listening.